Let's talk about case attacks. They're also known as case arguments. Case arguments, case attacks are the same thing, and we're talking about you debating on the negative. These are things that you run when you debate on the negative. Things that are used. A brief synopsis of a case attack is, or a case argument. Case arguments are arguments used to make the affirmative look bad. It's your chance to make them look weird. That's your objective when you run case attacks. There are many types of case attacks. However, they all fall into one of the four categories. One of these four categories. Listen very close. The first type of case attack is a harm takeout. Can anyone tell me what a harm is? Remember the shits? A harm is a part of the shits. What's a harm? Did you have your hand up? What's a harm? Say what? No, that's not a harm. That's what the case attacks is supposed to do. It's a problem. Absolutely, it's a problem. Harms are problems. So a harms attack or a harms takeout is an argument that says what? Say what? What was it? Something wrong with the plan? What? You got your hand up? Okay, what? That's almost it. What is a harms takeout? Maybe. Kind of like that. If a harms argument is an argument that says that there's a problem now with the status quo, a harms takeout is an argument that says no. Dang it. There is no problem with the status quo. There's a problem, there isn't a problem. The affirmative will always argue that there is some type of problem wrong with the way we live today. A harms takeout is an argument that says, no, you're crazy, you're smoking pot. There is nothing wrong with the way we do things today. Second type of case attack is a solvency takeout. Does anyone remember what solvency is? It's one of the S and shits. Yeah. Right, it's the way that you solve the problem. Now, if solvency is the way that you solve the problem, what is a solvency takeout? Well, no, a harms takeout says there is no problem. Who said it? You can't solve the problem. There's no way of solving it. Or a better explanation is that the case just won't work. The affirmative plan will not work. That's a solvency takeout. The next type is an inherency takeout. Now, inherency takeouts have two parts. The first, what is inherency? Huh? Right, there's nothing being done right now about the problem. Inherency is an argument that says that there's a problem now and the status quo isn't doing jack squat to solve it. Hello, how you doing? Very good. Come in, have a seat. We've been waiting on you. We're going to let these handouts kind of float around so that people who just walked in can get them. Just pass them back until they get to the people. People over here can get the handout. Okay. Hey, there's a lot of you just came in. How y'all doing? Good to see you. Well, thank you for coming. Okay, inherency is an argument that says there is a problem now and that the status quo isn't doing jack squat to solve that problem. Now, there are two explanations for what an inherency takeout should be. I'll wait for a minute. Everybody got a handout now? No, people over here don't have a handout? You don't have a handout? Well, a handout is coming to you. Very rapidly. We're going to hold off until people get handouts. Oh, yeah. Something I forgot to say at the beginning of my lecture. You all had a debate round this morning, right? Everybody, and for how many people that was their first real formatted debate round? Raise your hand if that was your first real debate round. Well, I want to welcome all of you people to my family. You're not debaters. Congratulations, you made it through your first debate round and you did not die, like some of you thought you did. Congratulations. Now everybody has a handout? You don't? Okay, you do. All right. You want any more? Okay. Still talking about inherency. Now we know what inherency is, that a problem exists now in the status quo, and that the status quo isn't doing jack to solve it. An inherency takeout. Well, there are two genres of inherency takeouts. One genre comes from the old school. How many people's parents tell them that they should listen to old school music and that rap music just isn't real music? Okay. Right, y'all gotta listen like Marvin Gaye and stuff like that. Well, there's an inherency argument that is from the old school. People like Tuna and Sarah Ryan sitting in the back used to use this argument when they were debating because they're old school debaters. But that argument says that there's no inherent barrier in the status quo. That means that there's nothing stopping us from doing it in the status quo. That was their argument. That was their inherency argument. Today, debaters use a different type of argument. We say that the plan is already being done in the status quo. So an example of an inherency takeout is if school uniforms are being done now, then there's no inherency. There's no reason for us to redo school uniforms. Does that make sense to everybody? Nod your head, please. Let me know you're up. Yeah, y'all with me. All right, y'all. Very good, very good. We're going to start doing the wave in a minute. Huh? Say what? Yeah, two types of inherency arguments, of inherency takeouts. The first type, people with gray hair used to use this one. They argued that there is nothing stopping us from doing the plan in the status quo. That's one type of inherency argument. The more used one today is an argument that says that the plan, the specific affirmative plan, is already being done in the status quo. Does that make sense how that works? Why would you do the plan if the plan is already being done now? Ta-da. Makes sense. All right. The last type of case attack. And this will be your most useful case attack ever in your whole entire life. It's called a case turn. A case turn. Yeah. Say what? Yeah, if you're negative, you use this argument against the affirmative. Okay? Who else had their hand up? All right. A case turn. Can anyone tell me what a turn is? Turn around, turn. Yeah, hands in the air. Side to side. Huh?
It's a counter.
It's a counter. Well, yeah, you're right. It's a counter argument. But a case turn says that the case, or the affirmative plan, whenever I say case, I mean the affirmative plan, that the affirmative will not solve for problems, but they'll actually cause a whole bunch of stuff to happen. Example, the argument is that we should wear school uniforms, that school uniforms are good, and if you come to school in a plaid skirt and a nice button-down plaid shirt, then you're not going to be violent. Example of a case turn is an argument that says, no turn, people will still not like me because they know who I am, and that's going to cause more violence. Or that students will get mad because they have to wear those ugly clothes, and that's going to cause violence in the schools. Example of a case turn. It's different from a solvency takeout. A solvency takeout just says that the plan won't work. It doesn't go the extra step of saying that the plan causes bad things. It just says it won't work. An example of a solvency takeout is uniforms just won't stop violence for whatever reason. A case turn says that uniforms will actually cause violence. Does everybody understand that?
Yes.
Not if you're with me. I won't. Yeah. Whenever I ask if you understand it, shake your head in a vertical manner, kind of like so. That makes sense? All right, if you don't shake your head in a vertical manner like that, I'm going to come and pick at your drool because you're probably asleep. You're shaking your head. No, you're shaking your head the wrong way. What's wrong? You get it? You actually get it? See, you're just trying to mess with me. All right. What a solvency takeout is? A solvency takeout is an argument that says the plan won't work, i.e. uniforms. If a solvency takeout for the uniforms affirmative is an argument that says that uniforms will not decrease violence. That is different from saying that uniforms actually cause violence. Does that make sense? That makes sense. Looking for people who are asleep. Scanning the room. All right, very good. So, everybody has case attack down. Right. The negative only has to win one type of those arguments. Just one. You don't have to win them all. Just one. Now, there's a caveat to that, an exception. If you're going to win one, you need to win all of it. All right? Because just if you don't win, or if you don't take out all of my arms, then I have problems. There's still problems going on in the status quo. So in order for the negative to win, you need to just win all of one. Kind of sucks for the affirmative, doesn't it? The affirmative has to win all of them in order for the affirmative to win. So, if I'm affirmative and I win that there's a problem in the status quo, but I lose that the plan is going to solve that problem, what happens? What happens? The negative wins. Right, and I lose. If I am negative, is he asleep? Okay, if I am negative and I win that the affirmative does not solve the problem, what happens? Huh?
It contributes.
I'm supposed to win the whole round. If I'm negative and I win that the affirmative doesn't solve anything, then I win. On the contrary, if I'm negative and I win that the affirmative only doesn't solve half of the problem, but they get all of the rest of the solvency, and I don't have something else, like another bad thing that's going to happen, then I'm supposed to lose. Or most of the time I lose. No, that's not for real. Not seriously most of the time I lose, but most of the time in that scenario, I'm supposed to lose. That makes sense to everybody? Get your nod on. I don't see head shaking. That's scary. Okay, I got some head shaking. Head shaking on this side? I need the heads up and down. There you go. All right. Head shaking on this side. Up and down. There we go. All right, cool. Right. Okay, the affirmative has to defend every part of the plan. If they don't, they lose. It means that if the affirmative says that they're going to solve for a problem, they have to defend that. If the affirmative says that all inner city kids are bad, you have to make them defend that if you're on the negative. They have to defend everything that they say in the 1AC. It must be defended. It has to. There's no two ways about it. So, if the affirmative claims that black children just cannot learn, then you have to make them defend that. Of course, we all know that. There's no way to defend that. But you have to make them defend it. And if they can't defend it, then you are supposed to win the debate round. Does that make sense? So, and the way that you make them, the way that you make them look stupid, and the way that you bring out that they can't defend their assumptions is through case attacks. You attack the case. All right? You say that there is no harm because we all know that black children are very bright. Every one of you are beautiful and every one of you are very bright. Okay, didn't get the joke. And I'm fast. All right, second part of my lecture. I'm just zooming through this lecture. You all are going to get out here. Well, you all are going to get your next lecture exactly 1:45. This is great. Second part of the lecture is about evidence. I think this part of the lecture is probably more important than the first one. Evidence. It's about evidence. One, in debate, there is no absolute truth. There is no absolute truth. Say what? There is no absolute truth. Only arguments. Alright? So don't think that there is one type of thing that you're supposed to say in order to win the debate round. No, there are only arguments. There is no absolute truth. The same goes for evidence. Just because a person reads a piece of evidence does not make that argument true. Just because you have an author that supports your argument does not make that argument true. That argument is still an argument. All right? And it's subject to any type of scrutiny. And your job, when you're on the negative, is to scrutinize the affirmative's argument or the affirmative's evidence, and vice versa. When you're on the affirmative, your job is to scrutinize the negative's evidence. All right? You have to challenge it. Okay. A couple ways you do that. And it's usually done in cross-examination. Remember Melissa's lecture about cross-examination. You have to have an agenda. One of your agendas can be to make their evidence look discredible. Alright, everybody with me? I want to see some heads. One time. Okay, no heads over here. Heads on the front row. Heads in the back. Cool, cool. Heads over here. Heads on the front row. Heads in the back. Cool, cool. Okay. Alright. You scrutinize evidence in the cross-examination. The first thing you need to scrutinize about evidence, you ask questions or you question the qualifications of their author. Here's an example of how this is supposed to go down. They argue that inner city kids learn slower than regular kids, or what they call regular kids, right? So you walk up in cross-examination and you go, "Hello, I just want to ask you a few questions. It's your argument that inner city kids don't learn as fast as kids who aren't from the inner city, is that right?" "Well, I think that's exactly right." "All right. Well, and can I see the card that you read that says that inner city kids don't learn as fast?" "Well, here's the card that I read." And you look at the card and you go, "Well, I see that your author is a staff writer from the Hickville Times. Isn't that true?" "That's right, and that's the best darn newspaper there is." You stop. You don't have to argue anything else in cross-examination. But in the next speech, you need to argue that, "Dude, he's from Hickville, USA. He doesn't know anything about inner city kids." That's how you question the qualifications of authors. Okay? You need to look at the qualifications of their authors. They will always have them. They will be under the tag. By their name, last name, and the date, there will be qualifications. Staff writer from Hickville, USA. Does that make sense? Get some nods. I don't see very many nods. Nods all across the board, in the back. People in the back, let me see you get your nod on. Or else I'm coming back there to pick at your drool. No nodding. Nods? Okay, cool. There goes some heads. Nods. All right, second way that you indict evidence is you question the assumptions of the people's author. What were they thinking when they wrote this evidence? All right? And you also do that at cross-examination. Two examples. The first one, and here's how this should go down. You walk up to cross-examination. Cross-examine the 1AC. The 1AC just said that most black kids have learning disabilities, so we should put something in black schools to get rid of their learning disabilities. So you walk up, and you go, "Hello, I'm sorry, I didn't get your name. Could you please tell me your first name?" "Well, my name's Red." "Okay, cool. Red. Could you please tell me your last name?" "Well, my last name's Nick." "Okay, Mr. Redneck." Let's talk about what you just said. You said that most black kids have learning disabilities. Is that right?" "Yeah, that's right." "Well, can I see the evidence that you read to support that claim?" "Well, here's my evidence right here." Bam, he hands you the evidence. Or she hands you the evidence. And you open it up. And you look at the card, and by where it says qualifications, the card was cut from the Well, actually, this is how it's supposed to go down. Okay, I'm looking at your card, and I see that you got this evidence from the National Tribune of the Coalition for Ku Klux Klans of America. Well, absolutely, and that's a very credible source. Thank you. Stop. Stop. You don't have to ask Mr. Redneck anything else. You need to argue in your next speech that he got his evidence or she got her evidence from the Tribune for KKK. Of course they're going to be biased. Of course they think you can't learn. That is, and that argument discredits their evidence. More specific example. Inner city schools are safer because of uniforms. The way you question that evidence, in cross-examination, you need to get the evidence and look at it. Most of the time, if the evidence is from Washington, a senator who is in Washington or a congressperson in Washington, has that congressperson ever been to your classroom? They don't know what happens in your classroom. They don't know what type of violence goes on in the school. All they do is write things that make the voters happy so that they can get reelected. Those are debate arguments that you can use to win debate rounds. Does everyone understand that? Let me get your head on. Shake your head. There you go. Very good. Third thing that you need to do to indict evidence is look at the date. For example, if you're in a debate round and someone reads a card that says that today's inner city youth are violent, and that card was from the spring of 1979. How many people were born in 1979?
You.
Yeah, me. Sarah. Represent. I was about 6 months old in the spring of 1979. That piece of evidence has a problem. Can anyone tell me what the problem is? It's real old. This isn't 1979. Y'all weren't even around in 1979. So that means that the evidence is old. It's not as credible as your piece of 1999 evidence that says that there is a rapid decrease in inner city violence. So you need to compare your evidence based on the date. Say, look, these people are reading 1979 evidence. I have a piece of 1999 evidence that directly refutes that. They don't lost their mind. Yeah. Now, last thing is you need to read the other team's evidence. Actually read it. Take the time to read their evidence. Don't just take the card, sit there, and leave it there until the debate round is over like I did. Read their evidence. And when you read it, you're looking for specific things. The first thing you're looking for is what we call a claim without a warrant. If the evidence says that uniforms are going to lead to nuclear war, and when you read the evidence, all they say is uniforms will lead to nuclear war, there is zero reason why that's true. That's what we call a claim without a warrant. You make a claim, but there's no reason to support your claim. You need to get up in your next speech and say, dude, there's zero warrant for this claim, which means that they have no reason why uniforms are going to lead to nuclear war. Questions? Any questions? Y'all nod your head. Everybody understands? Yeah. Very good. I see heads are shaking. I hadn't picked nobody's drill yet. I'm disappointed. All right. The second thing that you need to do when you read the evidence is you look to see if they power tag, what we call in debate power tags, look to see if they power tag the evidence. If their evidence says that everyone is going to die in a nuclear war if you do the case, and you read the evidence, and the evidence says, well, uniforms may cause some inner city instability and parents will be mad. They ain't said nothing about nuclear war. Nothing. So you need to bring that up. You need to go do it. The evidence doesn't say anything about a war happening because of uniforms. Does that make sense? Nod your head. Very good. Last thing. Personal message from me to you. You don't need evidence to win debate rounds, but it's helpful. You can win debate rounds based on your own brain and how smart you are. Just because someone reads a piece of evidence does not make that argument absolutely true. There is no absolute truth. Trust yourself. Trust yourself. If you think an argument's wrong, you need to make arguments as to why that argument is wrong. And sometimes those arguments are the most persuasive arguments outside evidence. Most of the time, they will even be more persuasive. So don't be afraid to make those arguments. You have about 5 minutes. You can probably go get some water or take a break. Thank you.